accession number 20267, Reel 2.
John Webber, Reel 2. Which ship did you go into Dhaka?
The Polish ship, the Sobieski. And the skipper was a former U-boat commander in the First World War, so we were told.
Were you in a unit by now?
Yes, this was the 3rd Battalion. I was in D Company of the 3rd Battalion Royal Marines, which was part, I think, of 101 Royal Marine Brigade.
What was the voyage like?
I can't recollect anything unusual about the voyage down. We arrived off Dakar, and there was a lot of negotiations going on. We were offshore, and I don't know how it happened, but somehow or other, the Royal Sovereign, I'm not sure, it was one of the royal ships. It wasn't, the French fired and hit it and badly damaged the forecastle somewhere. But I'm sure from record that we weren't meant to fight our way into Dakar at all, because we were ordered to pack Blanco and Brasso in our big packs, and I think we were intended to do some sort of parade in Dakar, because as I understand it, the object of the brigade going out there was that they thought the Spanish were going to come in the war, and it was the Cape Verde Islands or the Canary Islands that we were going to take in advance of them being turned into submarine bases. That's how we always understood it, anyway. And we eventually then scuttled off down, and landed up in Freetown Harbour. Now, that is the most beautiful harbour. It really is. Huge, beautiful harbour. And the Royal Sovereign came back in, and I can remember being in the harbour with her guns slung out to the opposite side of the damage and sort of tilted. And they eventually did something, plastered her up or temporarily repaired her. And then they painted a huge bow wave on her and on the another naval ship, which was a repair ship. And they sailed, and she went back up to Jib, and then, as I understand it, went across to America for repairs. We initially went, in the first camp, we went up on the hills above Freetown, which was a lovely view. They could recollect their being put on cook's duty, sitting around peeling yams for the breakfast and for the dinner, and the old cook always used to give us a good cup of tea. And I also remember one night we had spent most of the night lying in bed holding on to the guy ropes to stop the tent getting blown away. And then we moved down to Lumley Beach. Now, if that was in England, it would have been worth a fortune, because I think it was 7 mile long and beautiful hard sand. And there was a temporary camp being built there, wooden camp with no windows in it. And we moved into that. And the MO did a lot to clear it to prevent malaria. And we stayed there and did several exercises. And every morning the routine used to be that reveille, and then about 10 minutes later you're all on paraded on the beach, and then someone would blow a whistle, and then everybody'd dive in for a swim, and then when the whistle went you dived out. And I remember I had spent the night on sentry duty, and we were watching this manoeuvre. The whistle went and they all dived in. And a few and had him hardly in when they back out again. And there was a whole lot of starfish, stingfish, in the water. And I always remember my friend Ram Haddon, he had the mark of this octopus, or not octopus, stingfish, on his arm where one had, and the water was absolutely full of them, so they couldn't swim. And then the other thing I remember is that one night, somewhere in the middle of the night, we sort of were walking up here into the bugler sounding off letters from Lousy Lou. And we'd seen the previous evening, we'd seen an aircraft carrier come into Freetown Harbour, and obviously she had our mail on board. And somebody had given permission for it to be distributed, and it was in the early hours of the morning, because the bugler sounding off letters from Lousy Lou. It's funny. That was, that's the Marines, name for the call.
This is a bugle call, isn't it?
Bugle call, yeah. Letters from Lousy Lou.
Can you remember how it goes?
No, I can't remember how it goes, not now. Something, letters from Lousy Lou. And then, of course, there's a mad rush for the letters, and it was great. The other thing I remember, we went on one exercise, and I'll never forget this. We went through some native village, and some native woman had a sort of a mortar and pestle thing, pounding some rice. And as she was bent over, her left breast nearly touched the ground. I can never forget it. It's an amazing sight. I remember that going through this village. And the other thing I remember there was that, of course, I celebrated my 20th birthday. No, 21st birthday. Yeah, wait a minute. Yeah, the 21st birthday.
Because your birthday is in November.
Yeah. And I celebrated my 21st birthday there on a Cadbury's milk chocolate bar and a bottle of pop. Clearly remember that. Me and Martin Haddon, we shared it between us. And then each company rotated. You spent so long down there, and then you went back on board the ship. So you had three companies ashore and one on board. And we were on board ship when a convoy from the far Middle East came in. And the naval officer there, because I was on gangway duty then, and it was a magnificent sight to see all these liners. Now, I don't know now how many it was, somewhere between 30 and 40 liners. You could see them coming over the horizon and coming into Freetown Harbour. I don't suppose you could put a collection of liners like it together today. And the naval officer, Merchant Navy officer was there. He said, "You'll never see a collection of liners like this again." And in that convoy was a sister ship of the Sobieski, the Paderewski. And these Poles on board our ship went absolutely mad when they saw that ship, because it was their colleagues, you know. And I can always remember the one on the gangway, he's called Stefan, and he was a huge fellow, big Pole, lovely man. And he was absolutely over the moon because, of course, they had a lot of friends on board the other ship, and the boats were going to and fro. And then we eventually sailed from there in the early, I suppose it was January, I think. We can't be sure. And we then went up to Gibraltar, because we had to go into dry dock for the ship's bottom to be scraped, because it had got all slimed up in the harbour. And we had a nice little spell in Gibraltar. I remember Ron Haddon and me, we got up to the top of Gib and saw the apes and the town. Of course, there was a lot of drink there, and a lot of the lads got into trouble for getting drunk. Of course, their punishment was the next morning, for the rest of it, was to go down and help scrape the ship's bottom. That was the punishment. Confined the ship. Every morning, defaulters prayed down in the graving dock. We helped scrape the ship's bottom. And then eventually, then that was another thing. Well, we were there, we got a most annoying thing, an epidemic of scabies. I think it was scabies. Anyway, it got all around the private parts and it was most irritating. And I unfortunately caught it and spent a short spell in the ship's hospital before it was cleared.
How do you think that came about?
I don't know. It suddenly seemed to appear, you know. And I also remember a ship coming in, which they captured, a French ship, and it was absolutely loaded with crates of eggs. And then we eventually sailed early one morning, beautifully calm, not one evening rather, beautifully calm evening. And we woke up the next morning, we were in the Bay of Biscay in a most tremendous storm. And we had the other ship was with us, was the Kenya, had the other, another battalion or battalions on board. And if you looked at, one minute you could see her funnel, and the next minute you could see her screws out of the water. The two destroyer escort, we didn't see. And that continued for a couple of days. And so many people were seasick that I can remember, I was fortunate not to be, spending, because there were certain sentry posts round the ship, sort of relieving people that were taken sick. And it was a tremendous rough. And I also remember that the mess deck was either side the galley, and it was a long mess deck with tables, but when I went to the mill on this particular occasion, it was just the one table with about a dozen of us, or 20 on. And to come from the kitchens into this part, there was about a 2 foot part raised bit in the door. I presume it was the top sop water moving from one place to the other. And I'll never forget this, it was the evening meal, and suddenly the door opened, banged back, and the sergeant came through. Officers, were there any complaints? And Captain Seeley stepped through. Oh, before that, before he came, one of the lads going to get the soup had spilt some just inside the door. The door opened, the sergeant, I presume, his heavy boots perhaps saved him. He said, officer, did any complaint? Paddy Seeley stepped through, slipped on the, what is it, went flat on his back and slid down the gangway to the other end in his best KD. Which caused great amusement to the troops, but not to him. And also on that voyage back, we used to get whistles, and each meal, that the whistle was called something different, but basically it was a whistle. And
what is a whistle?
Well, it's meat made up into different forms, you know. But I could clearly react. And then to take us home, apparently this submarine captain that was took us way out into the Atlantic and right up round by Iceland to come into Glasgow. And when we were up north and just way up near Iceland, they ironically ordered a short arm inspection. I presume most people will know, if they're not under the services, what a short arm inspection is. But we were told to parade in our greatcoats on the deck. Take your greatcoat off with nothing on for the MO to have a look at you in this bitterly cold weather, and then whip your greatcoat on and get back down below and get dressed. It was caused great amusement, actually.
Was this because venereal disease was a problem?
Well, yeah, that was what the that was what it was for, but that was sort of routine. Often you had a what they called, it was referred to as a short arm inspection in the Navy, or in the Marines anyway. And then, as we got near one of the duties we had aboard that ship, every so often, a number of us were sent up onto the stern of the ship where there were a whole load of smoke floats fastened. And our job was, if needs be, to release those smoke floats and check them overboard if we needed to try and get away. And I spent several nights up there on that duty. And the thing I remember about that is that during the night you could go down to the ship's galley and get this big mug of steaming hot cocoa with the fat on the top and drinking it to keep you warm. And then as we were coming into Glasgow, I don't know what happened, but we had the two destroyers, and it was early in the morning, before Reveille, and suddenly one of the destroyers whistled and shot round, and they chucked a couple of depth charges overboard, not too far away from the ships, and I'd never seen a Reveille so quick in all my life. Everybody was up on deck in no time. And then we went into Gurrock and disembarked. And then they put us on a troop train to go home on leave. But what they didn't tell us was that that troop train went as far as Crewe and disembarked the whole of battalion of us. And then you had to find your own way home from crew. And then we, how long leave we had. What I do remember is that I had my kit bag and my rifle. And I arrived at Marston Station in the early hours of the evening. And I walked down through the village, which is about a mile to my home, with the kit bag on my shoulders, and went in, and I went up to our front door, and I knocked the front door. I waited, and to my surprise, I heard my mother shout, "It's John." And I heard a chair go crash, and she's at the front door. Now, how she knew it was me, I'll never know to this day. But it was remarkable. Because at the time, she had some workmen, railway workers there, who were extending the station yard for the second front. Then, after that, we went back up to, I'm pretty sure on that, we went back up to Hoyk and Stobbs Camp, which is just outside of Hoyk. We had a long stay at Hobbs, which I remember quite friendly anyway. There we continued to train, the usual route marches and things. I also remember that one of the winters were there. The snow was up to the windows of the Nissen huts. The only way we could get down into the valley bit for our mill was to get out the windows and roll down the snow. We used to have quite frequent visits into Hoyk, a lovely little town, Hoyk. We were there one New Year's because I remember Jock Stewart, who was in our section and trying to dance on a jig on the top of a post office box in the centre of Hoyk one evening. You can still see him trying to do it. And then, of course, his most famous episode was when he tried to ride the Bannockburn. There's a horse and statue at the end of Hoyt to one of those battles with Scotland. And he was trying to ride this horse back to Hoyt with his mate Stuart from Bristol hanging on to the tail, shouting, "Wait for me, Jock." Which caused a bit of a scene. And when the RSM from one of the other battalions came along and ordered them to get down, and got a reply in the best Queen's English, or not Queen's English, where he could go and what he could do. And anyway, finally the corporal that was there got him back to camp. And the next morning, they were up before the company commander, and this RSM came in and gave his evidence, because I was the company commander's orderly at that time, and I saw this. And Captain Hellings, Major Hellings, Peter Hellings it was, and he punished these two with some minor punishment. And when they'd gone and the RSM had gone, he just rolled up with laughter at what had been related to him. And ever after that, every weekend, after the weekend, the first thing he would say to the Sergeant Major when he came in, "Are Stuart and Taylor in trouble this morning, Sergeant Major?" And he would say, "No, sir." And he would say, "Good." And that was it. One of the jobs I got given there was captain of the heads, which meant cleaning out all the toilets, eventually led to me being made a lance corporal. And in charge of the stores. But then we used to pay frequent visits up to Gurrock, get on board a troop ship, I think it was usually the Kenya, go up to Inverary, do various exercises off of the ship up and then back, and then after a while we would come back to Stobbs. And one of the two incidences I remember on one of those trips up to Inverary, I don't know where they're at the same time. One was they had us out on the lock trying to get us to row a boat, which was a bit of hilarious, really, trying to for all of us to row an ordinary ship's lifeboat with about eight of us, I think it was, which didn't used to go very well. And the other thing I distinctly remember while we were there, Winston Churchill came up to visit us. And we were on the ship then, and I can remember him leaving, and he was in what was known as the Eureka boats, and he was in the leading boat, and then down behind him in the shape of a V were some other U-boats, I can't remember how many, but they made a V. He was in the front one, waving his hat, and we were all on the ship's decks cheering him as he leaves. And I can still see him going down Loch Fyne in this Eureka. And the other thing is, also when we were up there, and I can't remember which time, but we were having our breakfast, and hearing the news come over the radio of the sinking of the Hood.
How did you react to that?
Well, we were all very, very astonished, really, that she went down so quickly, for one thing, and sorry at the loss and the loss of life. And then, of course, we followed with interest the chase of the Bismarck. And then sometime during that time there, we did a second visit to Scapa Flow. We went up to Gurrock, got on the ship, and it went up. Well, I don't know. We were kitted out we had ammunition. We were really kitted out for an operation, and we sailed from Gurk. And I can quite clearly remember, because I could read the stars to a degree, that in that late evening I went out on deck and I had a look up at the stars, and we were definitely going due south. Anyway, the next thing had happened, we lands up in Scapa Flow, which meant we must have turned around and gone due north sometime. And I've heard the rumour since, whether it's true or not, that we were due to do some landing in France or somewhere, but that the Germans had got to know we were coming and were waiting for us, and that the V French had got to know the Germans knew we were coming and had sent a message back. And we were diverted up to Scapa Flow to do this in quite a big landing exercise. Now, one of the things they dreamt up then was that, and it had a lot of logic to it, that the initial wave into the shore would get into the landing craft at the davit heads, that they would lower the boats while the ship was coming in, and you'd be away and ashore before the noise of the anchor being dropped would alert the people ashore. Now, that's very good in theory, but the trouble was, when we got to Scapa Flow, there was a force, something gale blowing. They couldn't use the starboard side, I think it was, because it was blowing the landing craft inboard. But they tried it on the port side, which where we had to go. And I can remember going down this boat, and the risk was, of course, that when you hit the water, if they couldn't get the two chains undone, anchors in, letting you done simultaneously, you were going to get tipped out. And I can remember sitting there with my webbing equipment all undone, my main west blown fully up, and my fingers under the strap so that would go, and I would just have the main west. But fortunately, we landed all right and went ashore. But then again, we got put broadside on the rocks, not up on the beach. And we had with us, in the boat, a brigadier from the war. I think it was a brigadier. Anyway, he was a fairly high-ranking officer in the boat with us as an observer, who very foolishly passed his hip flask round, which he didn't have very much left when it got back to him. And then when we landed, we had to go up a fairly steep, muddy slope, and we were using toggle ropes. And I always, the last I remember seeing of him, and then what he thought of that, I don't know, was having been pushed bodily up this muddy slope by a Middlesbrough lad who said, "Go on, Chol, get up," and pushing him up, and that was the last we saw of him. And then we went up and did this exercise. And we finished up on a road junction, which was our company headquarters, was Major Hellings, or Peter Hellings, Captain Hellings, I think he was then. And then we heard that King George VI was coming up to review this exercise. And they say that was the cover for us not going on this operation. That he was, you know, that was a camouflage, as it were. But when Captain Hellings heard this news that he was coming up, I can't repeat the language he used, but he moved his headquarters from on that road junction right up onto a remote farmstead way up on the side of a hill. And that farm place, I forget what they fed us with, but that farm lady gave us nearly all, I think it was eggs and bread for one meal.